Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. The Kremlin and the Kingdom, the Russian-Saudi rapprochement. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's trip to Saudi Arabia accelerated the all-around rapprochement between Moscow and Riyadh, and it also helped sort out some of the details for King Salman's upcoming trip to Moscow next month. Donbas. Has the time for peacekeepers arrived? Russia will put forth a UNSC resolution recommending that foreign forces provide protection for the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission in Donbas, essentially heralding the possible future introduction of peacekeepers into this war zone and earning significant praise from Germany. And also, Bannon's insurgency. Can he take down the rhinos? Former White House chief strategist and current executive chairman of Breitbart, Steve Bannon, is reportedly preparing to support several primary challenges to Senate Republicans, setting the ultimate outsider up for a possible confrontation with hardened establishment insiders. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is the developing partnership between Russia and Saudi Arabia. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's trip to Saudi Arabia accelerated the all-around rapprochement between Moscow and Riyadh, and it also helped sort out some of the details for King Salman's upcoming trip to Moscow next month. Lavrov's visit had as its first and most public objective the strengthening of bilateral coordination in resolving the war on Syria, and Moscow's top diplomat welcomed Riyadh's efforts to unite the opposition under one group. This is something that Russia had been working towards for some time, and the fact that it and Saudi Arabia see eye to eye on this regard is a promising sign of what might come in future peace talks. Moreover, Lavrov is helping to plan King Salman's historic upcoming trip to the Russian capital, which will be a major sign of just how much relations have developed between the two erstwhile rivals over the past year. There were signs of a thaw between these competing great powers when they both decided to work together on the OPEC output deal last year, and then renew it again once it originally expired. Afterwards, now Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman traveled to St. Petersburg to attend its International Economic Forum, where he met with President Putin and lauded the evolving relations between both sides. Russian Energy Minister Alexander Novak said at the time that his country and Saudi Arabia were exploring cooperation on over 30 joint projects, and that Russia might partake in the forthcoming partial privatization of Saudi oil giant Aramco once it puts its shares up sometime next year. The productive Russian-Saudi summit in St. Petersburg soon thereafter saw Rostec CEO Sergei Chemezov declare that a $3.5 billion preliminary agreement had been reached in selling unspecific arms and equipment to Saudi Arabia, followed by the news late last month that both parties will hold their first ever joint military technical panel by the end of the year. The military dimensions of the Russian-Saudi rapprochement might be surprising to some observers, but they perfectly correlate with Moscow's efforts to clinch new and non-traditional partnerships as it seeks to become the ultimate balancing force in 21st century Eurasia. And, as can be seen, it isn't shying away from military diplomacy to do so. All in all, it's undeniable that Russia and Saudi Arabia have made tremendous progress on rebooting their previously fraught relations, and this new partnership has the very real potential for reshaping the ever-changing geopolitics of the Mideast region. All right, folks, well, starting off this edition of Trendstorm, we are joined by Mr. Patrick Armstrong. Patrick's a former analyst in the Canadian government who blogs at the website Russia Observer at patrickarmstrong.ca.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Patrick, Saudi Arabia is considered a close ally of the U.S., but now it's reaching out to Russia despite Trump's extravagant visit to the kingdom a few months ago and the hundreds of billions of dollars of arms agreements that they signed at that time. So, Patrick, what's behind Saudi Arabia's rapprochement with Russia?
The first thing I think we got to admit is this meeting is obviously important. As far as I can see, this is the very first time a ruler of Saudi Arabia has ever visited Moscow. And we've had a number of contacts in the last little while, so there's obviously something significant that's happening. I think to get a handle on what could be happening is to try and imagine what the world looks like from the point of view of Riyadh. So first of all, we have the war in Yemen. It's been a complete disaster for Riyadh. It's easy to imagine how it could get even worse. Quite difficult for us to imagine how it could become better from their perspective. Iran as a huge concern to them. For some reason, I think wrongly, they regard Iran as a complete threat to them. And they cannot possibly have not noticed that two decades of neocon-directed and Riyadh encouraged, I mean, Riyadh's been right in there encouraging all this stuff, that these two decades of these American wars in the Middle East have resulted in an Iran that is far more secure, far more influential, and far more powerful than it ever was in 2000. So now everywhere Riyadh looks north, it sees Iran. It sees Iran itself, now freed from sanctions, able to make money by selling oil. Huge influence in Iraq and Syria and across into Lebanon through Hezbollah. It also imagines, thanks to its own stupidity and the threats with Qatar, it now sees Persia moving into Qatar, so now on the east. And, of course, it imagines that Iran is behind the war in Yemen. So that's three out of four sides. So this has got to be a concern for them. Another issue, of course, is the petrodollar under threat? We'll talk a little more about this, and it does appear to be the petrodollar is under threat. And finally, the biggest fact, which you spend a lot of time writing about, the world is changing, and the way it's changing is U.S. power is on the wane, and Russia-China is on the rise. So Riyadh has a lot of grounds for some apprehension. And I can't help thinking of a historical precedent. When Abdulaziz conquered Arabia, he was helped by the British, who became his ally, sponsor, protector, whatnot. And I believe that he, and he's a very astute man, Abdulaziz, he came to realize sometime in the 40s, I guess, during the war, that Britain was going down and the U.S. was going to be the new power. So he worked on setting up a meeting with Franklin Roosevelt, which actually happened in 1945. And in other words, Saudi switched its allegiance or changed protectors to the United States, a decision that served them quite well up till now. So is the Saud family incorporated looking to do the same thing today? So this is in the background. We don't know. Now, a couple of other things that Moscow has going for it, or one other thing, which would make it more useful interlocutor than the United States. Washington takes moralistic stances, and there are countries that Washington refuses to talk to because they're morally indefensible or something, and Iran, of course, is one of them. It also takes sides in these wars. Russia, Moscow, goes to a lot of trouble to have good relations, or at least relations with everybody. So if Riyadh's trying to get out of the Yemen war, Moscow can help it. Washington can't. If it wants to have better relations or tone things down with Iran, again, Moscow is an interlocutor who could do something. And if Riyadh wants to talk to the world's largest oil importer and presumed enemy of the petrodollar, then who better to talk about how to talk to Xi Jinping than Putin, who's met with him about four or five times this year already? So apart from these issues under the surface, of course, what we're likely to hear about in the communique is a certain amount of blah, 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 and price-fixing deals between the two biggest exporters, possible trade deals, Russia building infrastructure, that kind of stuff. So a certain amount of stuff on the surface, but big, big, deep currents underneath, I believe.
Okay, yeah, this is very interesting. So I just want to ask you real briefly about the impact that these two oil giants can have on the global energy market if they continue to deepen their cooperation with one another. And also, I guess this is probably one of the most important questions. What consequences could this hold for the petrodollar?
Of course, your problem with getting together and trying to fix oil prices is if you and I, the two biggest producers, agree that we're going to reduce production in order to put the price up, the third guy can score a big money gain by pumping more than he agreed to. So this is why these pumping agreements always are pretty tricky. The petrodollar. Yes, indeed. Again, there's a surface answer and a deeper answer. The surface answer is Saudi Arabia is in the business of selling oil. If China's got something to offer, then we can do a deal. Underneath the surface, though, as I understand it, the petrodollar agreement was Saudi Arabia would insist that oil had to be paid for in U.S. dollars, which meant that everybody in the world has to have a trunk full of U.S. dollars, and in return, the U.S. would protect it. So how's that protection worked out? Again, from the Saudi view that Iran is the enemy par excellence, what it sees is Iran on three sides. So that protection's not working out very well, is it? Maybe, again, we come back to it. Maybe it's time to find a new protector. The Americans, of course, are not going to be happy. But this is all part of the great change that's happening in the world.
Patrick, so I just want to ask you, just how long do you think this relationship will last? Is this just kind of a spurt in the pan, or is this something long-lasting with Russia and Saudi Arabia?
Okay, as Palmerston said, great nations have only interests, they do not have friends. If the interests coincide, it will last. The world is changing, as you perfectly well know, and I think there's a lot of people looking around to figure out where they want to be when the music changes, and I think this is Saudi Arabia at least exploring the option of where it's going to fit into a new world in which Russia and China are much bigger and the U.S. and NATO are much smaller.
Okay, Patrick, thank you very much for this. I think that you have a very interesting theory that you propose about Saudi Arabia wanting to switch protectors, and I think it explains a lot of what's going on here. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us.
Okay, thank you, Andrew.
Trendstorm.
All right, folks, I have to say now we have the very high honor of welcoming Ambassador Arif Kamal to our program. Ambassador Kamal is a former Pakistani diplomat who dedicated almost 11 years in his 34 years of diplomatic profession to the Middle Eastern arena. He was also Pakistan's Consul General at Jeddah and alternate permanent representative to the OIC from 1996 to 1998. Ambassador Kamal was also the ambassador to Qatar from 1999 to 2003. Ambassador Kamal, it is such an honor to have you on Trendstorm today. Thank you for coming on to our show.
Okay.
All right, so what I'd like to ask you about is Russia's military technical cooperation with Saudi Arabia, because this is a pretty big deal. And I want to ask you, Ambassador, how will this affect Moscow's relations with both Tehran and Tel Aviv? How do you think they'll react?
Well, the Russian engagement with the Arabian Peninsula, Saudi Arabia in particular, would hopefully lessen the dependence on the West. This is such. And, of course, the forefront is the technological and military aspect as well, besides the economic muscle that may come into play. We already wanted to have suggestions of 30 projects on the card, and I'm sure Prime Minister Lavrov would know it better, but then 10 years of homework should unfold and get some sort of maturity in the arena. What I feel is that this Russian move forward will be consistent with the need for stabilization in the region as the region moves from the unipolar order to multipolarity. Precisely, it also fits into the objectives which the Russian policymakers would have in mind to attain the role of a balancer in the longer term. So I think this is very logical. If you ask about the impact on relations with Tehran and Tel Aviv, well, I think the simple answer is that it's not a zero-sum game of any kind. It is reordering the power configuration in the region, the ultimate one, and Tel Aviv will be not uncomfortable because we are attaining diversity of some sort. They are already talking to each other through proxy. When it comes to Tehran is a neighbor for all times to come and to stay neighbor in the neighborhood of Russia. Therefore, I think it would be in the Iranian interest as well to see things move in a manner that would inject some sanity, greater maturity, and a direction that would attain a mutual understanding and trust.
Okay, you made a very convincing case outlining the need for Russia to be a balancer in this regards. Thank you very much for that. So the last thing I want to ask you then, Ambassador Kamal, is how can this developing partnership between Russia and Saudi Arabia help to bring about a resolution to the Gulf crisis with Qatar and the war on Yemen?
Well, I think that the mini crisis with the Saudis and some other states, the Gulf states with Qatar, I take it as a matter of egos of the elite and not a fundamental question in the Islamic transient. And of course, if there is a push from Moscow, perhaps in tandem with the effort which Ankara can make, this would go away soon. And of course, greater Russian engagement in the region would can possibly set the basis for this kind of an effort. But the problem in Yemen is more complex, and it relates to the Saudi security as well. I mean, without going into the merits and demerits of the conflict, it seems that it has a great bounce back on the Saudi economy. And the Saudis would certainly like to look for a way that would give a space saving and would also stabilize their southern border, and also bring in products for a de-escalation in the broader region between Iran and Saudi Arabia. But then, of course, this kind of effort would not be something which the Russians can undertake unilaterally. Perhaps Iran will also have to be on board, and this kind of a situation can possibly be resolved, but not in the very immediate term. It will have to be some sort of a greater effort. More energy will have to go.
Okay, Ambassador Kamal, thank you so much for this very fantastic insight and high-level professional analysis. I know that our entire audience really appreciated it. Thank you so much again.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we reflect back on what both Ambassador Kamal and Mr. Armstrong both share with us today, I think that we can see that, yeah, the times, they are changing. I know it sounds cliche, but in this case, it's true. Russia and Saudi Arabia, who would have thought they'd have such a strong partnership? It's developing all across the board. It's multidimensional. Economic, military, it's even, you know, involved with Syrian diplomacy. It's all across the board. It's a huge partnership. It might even be pivotal, and we got to keep our eyes on it because this is something that is really very important. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.